live from Los Angeles, it's the at-home edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights. We'll be swimming like, yes, when we die. Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky. Where the stars are
growing. Musical guest, Vanessa Hudgens. I'm sure. And now, our host, the MC, the master.
Well, I invite so many people to know themselves through our workshops, as many of you know. Know thyself. Well, one thing I know about me is I like to think, and that used to be a problem, but now I like what I think about, and I like helping people think. And our guest today made me think. As a matter of fact, I learned that she's probably made me think more times than I even know, because she's been a ghostwriter for some authors that I've been reading over the years. So I'm sure she's made me think, and so this is nothing new. So here's one way that I like to make people think. So, for example, a client just last week was telling me how this person made her feel terrible, and how this person did this, and how this person did that, and how she didn't like herself for saying yes to him and doing what he told her to do, and she just can't say no. She just can't say no. And so after a while of her continuing to say she just can't say no, and I said, may I show you a different side of that? Because I don't see you having a problem saying no at all. And she's like, well, what do you mean? I don't say no to him. I said, well, I'm not to him, but you don't seem to have a problem saying no to yourself, no to your feelings, no to what you know to be true. You seem to say no all the time to yourself. And so she's like, oh my God, I never thought of it that way. I'm saying no. I'm saying no. So in a similar way, how often have I gotten to think about joy or peace and happiness as something that I could master, like a tool that I could use? Like I could use my peace tool in this moment, or I could use my, well, the peace tool maybe, because that we've kind of played with in this civilization, like smoking a peace pipe or something. So yeah, but our joy tool. But just because we've heard about it doesn't mean we know how to do it. So, but anyway, so peace tool, joy tool, happiness tool. Like I can go into my happy place. We've talked about that. So I got to thinking about all that, and I thought, how perfect we have Lisa on the show, because not only do I want to think about that, I want to talk about it with someone who's done a lot of thinking on that and is going to be able to share with us tonight. So looking forward to that conversation with our guest, Lisa McCourt, when we come back. And a great conversation and music by our musical guest, Vanessa Racci, all on the Life Changes Show, At Home Edition, right after this.
Have you felt inspired to meditate, but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety, but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi Beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi meditation. Phi meditation helps you harness the power of I am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi beads at phibeads.com. That's phibeads.com. You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA on the BBS Radio Network with your host, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com, which include luminaries such as comedian Michael Collier, actress Gabriella Wright, performing artist James Hood, and author Ken Honda. Email your comments and questions to info@lifechangesnetwork.com or askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com. You can also comment via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
So I am Filippo Voltaggio, host of The Life Changes Show, and I'm online with one of our producers and co-hosts, Mark Lejeur.
I am excited for tonight's show. You and I have talked about this so much with Dorothy over the years, and at one point I think we were talking about, I always had a curiosity of when everybody wants to be happier, why was the word joy like kind of uncool for a long time? And I'm so excited that it's kind of finally become the opposite and people are really dialing into the need for joy. Can't wait for this conversation.
Well, actually, thank you for that, Mark, because we've titled the show Peace, Joy, Happiness, Skills to be Mastered. So our guest is an author. She's a joy trainer and she's the creator of Joy School. Welcome, Lisa McCourt, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo. Wow, you did a lot of thinking today, sweetheart. That was some big thinks. And Mark, I don't know that joy is cool because I've never been known to be cool, but joy is my jam. So I'll own it, whether it's cool or not.
Awesome. Well, we're glad you're here. And tonight you were as cool as anybody.
I'll take it. I'll take that.
Yeah. Actually, let's take that and let's work with that on top of everything else. I love what you wrote me when I asked you for some questions we could touch on, and you said lots of laugh, but I get the feeling we do fine freewheeling it. So let's freewheel it. But you almost had to be freewheeling it, because when you got into this work, were there a lot of role models to say, this is how you get your joy or your peace or where you find your happiness for you?
Well, you know, I was a personal development junkie, as I think I've got some company in this room. And I just went from one training to the next and one guru to the next and meditated my ass off. And I was like so in that world because it was really painful for me in that other world. And I had found a place that felt like joy to me. So Joy School is personal growth training. It's all the transformational stuff that the masters have been talking about since the beginning of time, but it's focusing on the end result of that end result of really knowing that aspect of you, that inner soul self that every single one of us possesses, because it comes standard with this human package, but we get so distanced from it. So it is personal growth, it is transformation, it is personal development, but the end result is sustainable daily joy.
So the weird thing about this is that we, all of us here online and listening, we can all be peaceful, joyful, and happy this moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even have to be like find our worthiness to have it or have to learn how to get it, because maybe we knew how. Maybe we just lost it. Maybe we have to, you know what I mean? I'm just like, this is here already, but it's not.
Oh, sure. Anybody can have, you know, pleasant moments or a happy mood or a happy party or a happy circumstance. Joy to me is a more sustainable feature of our daily lives. And, you know, everybody defines joy differently. For some people, it's that really like excited, raise the roof, high vibe energy. And for others, it's a deeply zen, peaceful, quiet, kind of a bliss sort of joy. And I think we fluctuate at different times in our lives too, depending on what we have going on. If we're in a really stagnant, stuck phase, then joy is going to look more exciting. And if we're in overwhelm and stress, then joy is going to look more peaceful and quiet. So yeah, I mean, joy can wear a lot of hats, but basically I know that joy is inherent in every one of us. It's who we are at our core. It is being that soul self that we came here as and that we'll leave here as, because we came from pure love and joy and we'll go to pure love and joy. So everybody has that inner resource that makes every decision so easy and clear and just lights the path with this peaceful, beautiful energy, but we don't have access to it anymore. That's just where we are in humankind right now. That's just where we are in our society. None of us were taught how to honor that peace, access that peace, make it a part of our lives, much less let it take the lead in our lives. And so it's not about teaching anyone how to have joy. It's just unlayering all these things that we do that put a cap on our joy, because our quarks want to float.
Did you just say our quarks want to float?
For sure. And we're just pulling them down and mashing them down with all these crazy beliefs and things that we carry around and assumptions and all this focus on all those externals. Because we've been taught the opposite of what's actually true about happiness and joy. We've all been brought up to think if we have all these externals right in place, then those things will bring us joy. And that's just, you know, the American way. That's just the way our civilization is. And really, all those externals have very little to do with how we feel, very little to do with our inner peace and joy, as anyone who's ever gotten what they wanted could attest. But it doesn't mean that we don't want to keep having desires and bringing them to fruition, because that's what we're here for. That's what keeps a human life moving forward. That makes it juicy. That makes it fun and exciting. So I always say that at Joy School, we travel two parallel paths. One is learning the art of sustainable happiness, the most important one. And then the other one is, yeah, figuring out what we want to go get next and going and getting it. Because we can make all that happen so easily when we're aligned in our joy and our own inner happiness. The rest just falls into place effortlessly when we get that vibrational piece going first.
So many people say that we have to have a contrast in order to be able to recognize the good in our life, kind of thing. And I don't know that we have to, but I feel like everybody has. So since it's something that we all seem to have, and you had as well, are you seeing that as having served you?
Oh, sure. And yeah, I mean, that's a piece. I think that we're all going to have some challenges in our life. And that is where we deepen the most and grow the most and expand into that next version of ourselves. I don't know that you have to have a dark night of the soul to have a turnaround in your ability to be a joyful person. I think there are ways to put your focus and attention on it and sustain a practice long enough to have that happen without your world crashing down around you. But certainly all of us are going to have our worlds crashing down to some degree at some time. So it's great to have tools to make use of that and to see it as a beneficial, powerful experience.
You know, I like how you said that, but I had this visual of the world crashing down around us at different points in our life. It feels like exactly that. And yet when we look back, we say, oh, that was nothing. And here it is. And this is so much worse. But if we have the tools, then it doesn't have to be that or so much worse.
I think that we put so much effort into resisting situations and resisting breakups, resisting the loss of a job, resisting things that go on in our inner world, that without the resistance, when you can really get clear that everything that happens out there is happening for you, not to you, and it's happening as an opportunity, I think when you lower the resistance, you can be super, super sad or super, super angry, and still there's perceptible joy there because it's just flowing through you so naturally and authentically. We can have sadness without having suffering around the sadness when we just embrace it as a natural part of the human experience.
Well, I like that you're speaking from experience. You had to make a choice to go towards what you're doing now in this very conversation we're having from a very lucrative experience that you were having doing something else. And what was that choice like for you?
Well, this is the Life Changes show, right? I just I listened to what I was teaching. I'm always talking about with my groups and my trainings how we have to follow that joy. And it's so easy to see for other people, well, look, that's not bringing you joy anymore, so do this. But it's harder to see that in yourself, because we all like the money and the stability and the comfort. But truly, I just was spending all of my time at a keyboard and remembering when I used to spend a lot more time with people in groups. And I just got to the point where wrapping up this neat little package of all my thoughts and practices and modalities and sending it out into the void, whether in a book or a program I had written or blogging, I didn't want to send it out into the void anymore. So I just devised what would make me joyful, which is working with people in small groups, in my online groups, so that I can be there with them, because I know I can be so much more effective when I'm with somebody in their energy. Everybody has a different expression of this. Everybody has a different path that's going to take them there. And if I'm not with the people, I can't put them on exactly the right path. So it was really about, this is working and this is the story I made up. Because we always make up stories about everything, is that that's my superpower. Writing's my superpower. Writing's what I do really well. It's what I've invested all this time in. And, you know, how can I walk away from that? But I'm so happy to walk away from that and do this instead.
You know, arguably, you were bringing a lot of people joy from the people that were hiring you, from the people that were getting to benefit from your work. So you were giving joy, but at that moment, you weren't giving it to yourself as much.
Yeah, it was about me.
Yeah.
I wanted to be with them.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things I loved you said about the circles, and we'll talk about joy circles and joy school circle in a moment or now, but you love how we all learn from each other and how in a way nobody's going to have the experience that you did, and we all get to live vicariously through each of the experiences in a sense.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the most powerful ahas for one participant will happen when I'm working with a different participant, because sometimes it's, you know, uncomfortable to be in the hot seat. Sometimes you can really see your issues through someone else in a new light. It's there are never any accidents who ends up in circle together. It is so divinely orchestrated every damn time.
So in general, I could just hear this question kind of resounding, like, why don't we have joy in our lives? We talked about, we haven't been taught, it hasn't been encouraged, but what's wrong with us?
It's just what we, we come here wanting to know how it is here. We come into this world just full of this burning desire to make sense of it. What is, who am I? What is my place in the world? What are men? What are women? What is money? What are rules? What is love? And at the very impressionable age, prior to 7 for the most part, because our brain waves are different then. Most adults are alternating between beta and alpha brain waves in their usual lives. And before 7, we're between delta and theta, delta being sleep, which is why babies sleep so much, and theta being that very imaginative, very, very impressionable stage. And that's when we set up what I like to call bucket beliefs. We get an impression from our families. None of our parents are villains. I never like to villainize parents, but we get an impression about our place in the world. And for a lot of us, our parents, very in a well-meaning way, wanted to make us better. So constantly maybe gave us guidance on being better than we were. And that sends a message to an impressionable young child that I'm not worthy. I'm not enough the way I am. Just to name one very common belief that a lot of people carry around. And then I call them bucket beliefs, because once we have an idea about the world, we have these very powerful biases that are just understood in psychology. We have a confirmation bias that causes us to scan the horizon and look for anything that matches a belief we already have. You see a lot of this in politics in recent years, and we put it in that bucket. So we're not really ever looking for conflicting information to whatever we originally set up, because it's really super overwhelming here. And it's just easier, and we're creatures of comfort. We want life to be easy. So even if it's unhappy thoughts, unhappy beliefs, we're going to keep looking for evidence, and in a way creating that evidence, both vibrationally and just because our beliefs dictate our actions, dictate our results in life. So we're going to keep creating and attracting evidence to shore up whatever these beliefs are that we really formed at a very young age. Your life was designed by a child. And and that is the biggest thing that I've noticed with people that caps our joy. We have a set point, just like a thermostat set point. We have an amount of joy that if something shows up in our life that bumps up against what we're comfortable with, we're going to shut it down somehow. We're not going to do it logically. We think we want more joy, but we're going to shut it down because it's uncomfortable to us. So by getting really clear on the system, how it works, and opening up our perception, we can install new buckets and start feeding them. And that gradually changes up the thoughts that most of us are just habitual with, these cyclical thoughts that keep us out of joy. I don't believe we can rewire our beliefs. I know a lot of personal development trainings say that, and I've been in those. And then I've always, you know, felt bad about myself when I catch myself sort of reacting to something according to a belief that, damn, I paid so much money to rewire that belief in that last training. I can't believe I still have that damn thing. So I don't think we ever are going to get rid of that radar system that scans the horizon looking for evidence to shore up these beliefs. And that's what causes us to have a negative feeling and keep feeding the bucket. But what we can do is become aware of the system, and that changes our whole relationship with our thoughts, because most of our thoughts we should not be believing. Most of our thoughts are bullshit, and they're just habitual. And by noticing that and seeing it, we can, I call it walk around the statue. We can have whatever this thing is, this belief is out in front of us, realize that we're only seeing it from our tiny little sliver of the view where we're standing, and we can walk around it and see it from other perspectives.
I like.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you probably heard these statistics. I use Joe Dispenza's numbers. I used to use somebody else's numbers, but I like Joe's science when I do science stuff, that we have 400 billion bits of information available to us in every moment. Every moment, that's how many bits of information are surrounding us, and our conscious minds only let 2,000 bits of information through. And what determines that is this filter of beliefs that we wear like a cloak that is all we can see, until we do the work to expand our filter, and we can open up and see more of those opportunities and things that have always been there. We just were blinded to them.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Joe Dispenza's numbers and his science, and thank you for bringing that to our attention. Do you know what came to mind while you were sharing? I was thinking, you know how some of us drive in certain ways, and then some of us end up with tickets, and then sometimes the judge sends some of us to traffic school?
Yes. Well,
I was having wait. You maybe got there already where I'm going with it. I was having this visual of, you know, a couple a kid standing in front of, you know, a judge who did something wrong or what have you. And the judge says, okay, that's it. I'm sending you to joy school. Oh, no. Joy school. Wait, what's joy school?
I'll take them all.
Yes, right? And so just short of a judge or social worker sending somebody to joy school, who comes to joy school? Is it woo-woo kind of people?
I know that for marketing purposes, it's better to have a niche audience, but truly, I get all ages. I've got right now from 19 to 80. We've got
Mm.
more women than men, but some men, more than you'd think, you know. And yes, woo-woo, and not as woo-woo. And somehow, I'd say more often than not, it's women in the second half of their lives. This is my you know, who I tend to attract the most. But yeah, somehow it works, and I've thought about segregating the circles, making them, you know, for the younger people and the older people, or maybe a women's group and a men's group. But they get so much from one another
Yeah.
that I just don't want to do that. I feel
Yeah.
like it always works out.
You know, it's interesting, and in a sense, that's not to say that you might not do it for other reasons, but in a sense, that is maybe how we're supposed to be. And maybe that's why joy works better when we're surrounded by the younger and the older, and by eliminating sometimes some of the older people in our lives, how we miss out on so much, for
Yeah.
example, or the other way around.
No, I think that's very true. You know, they say your vibe attracts your tribe, and that you're supposed to be with people who, you know, you want to emulate, so that you're, you know, being pulled up rather than being pulled down. I don't know. Somehow, I think that what we find out really quickly in circle is that they're, you know, these are just silly earth costumes we wear. We are all exactly the same entity. We're the same energy. We're the same soul. So I think that that's almost more delightful when you recognize it about people that you wouldn't have necessarily identified with on a persona level, you know, and the persona, the identities that we wear around. It's almost cooler and more meaningful when you realize that about completely other kinds of people.
Yeah, and in which case that brings your point that they may be people we want to emulate, whether they're three or two, you know, or 99. There may be something there that we're looking for within ourselves.
Yeah, that's true.
And actually, as I say this, it kind of brings me to something that's near and dear to your heart. I love you, Stinky Face.
Yes. It's funny. I know on the Life Changes show that I'm preaching to the choir here, but a lot of the things we talk about in circle is that we're not meant to be the same person our whole damn lives, right? And that doesn't just mean we change our jobs or change our partners, but our insides too can change. Like, we are meant to grow and evolve. And so many people feel guilty about that, you know, like, oh, but I spent so much money to learn to be this kind of career, and I've invested all this time, and
right.
I've wasted all that time if I want to do something else. No, it's never wasted time, especially now with the you know, the consciousness just rising so quickly, and so many of us so much more attuned to our inner direction. It is okay to be a bunch of different things and wear a bunch of different hats. So you're referencing one of my earlier hats. I Love You, Stinky Face is a children's picture book that I wrote 20 years ago when I was pregnant with my first child. And it's been a great, great, great seller for me over the years. It's had 10 sequels. Publishers Weekly called it a modern classic. And the thing that I love the most about it is so many parents have told me that, you know, thank you for writing this book. It helps me to show unconditional love to my child. And of course, it begs the question, like, really, you're a parent? Like, you can figure out how to show unconditional love to your child. But I think those of us who weren't brought up with it, maybe
and
who
we don't
it's
have
not
it for ourselves.
Yeah, we sure don't. And as a general rule of thumb, we sure don't. We're harder on ourselves than anybody. So yeah, that has been a great book for me over many, many years. Fun fact, the book is about, it's, you know, Mama, Would You Love Me If? And it's, if I were a smelly skunk, oh, I'd call you Stinky Face and this, if I were a slimy swamp creature, a scary alien, all these scenarios. So it's Mama professing this, no matter what, I would love you. That child who was in my belly when I wrote that book is now my transgender daughter. And it's opened up a whole conversation with the transgender community.
Love you no matter what. Wow.
Yeah. So that's that's one place where I am planning to have a separate circle, just because I've studied so much about that now, and I understand a lot of the unique challenges the transgender people face. So I will be putting in a transgender circle for maybe two, one for the transgender people themselves and one for the parents and loved ones of transgender.
Well, you
That
must
that's
have
a
been channeling some energy there when you were pregnant, in order to come up with something that would serve you and everybody else that is has a child, or maybe one of the iterations could be for people themselves to be able to read to themselves if they love their own stinky face or not, if they were a skunk. Because do we love ourselves exactly like we are right now? It's a really good question. Of course, Lisa's making me think. Lisa McCourt, we've called it Peace, Joy, Happiness Skills to be Mastered. She's an author, she's a joy trainer and creator of Joy School. And of course, we just talked about one of her books. And you can find out more about her and Joy School at Lisa McCourt. And that's MCCOURT.com, lisamccourt.com. We'll be right back with a few more minutes with Lisa when we come back. And Lisa, I'd love for you to share with us how, in so many ways, we are in our infancy of our development, which can be a really exciting thought. In our next segment, we're also going to have our Ask Dorothy question. And then after that, we'll be joined by our musical guest, Vanessa Rachi, all on the Life Changes Show at Home edition, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
Listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Vortex Dome LA, with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online at lifechangesshow.com, via Twitter at Life Changes Show, and Facebook at Life Changes Show.
Mm-hmm. Peace, joy, happiness. Our guest, Lisa McCourt. We've been talking about Joy School. And Lisa, what can we expect when we enter Joy School with you?
Well, Joy School circles are the main delivery system for Joy School. I do private training. Joy School circles, if you come into a circle, it's 90-minute training once a week that we come together, no more than 10 in a group. And there are practices that we do in between and group meditation sessions that we do via Zoom. And that is really the heart and soul of Joy School. That's my joy. I wanted to tell your listeners also that we have a free event the first Monday of every month. I call it an online joy party. And I host other authors and speakers and guests. And it's all free. And it's all at the website. I'm going to have Scott Stabile this coming first Monday, who is just a beautiful, precious teacher of love. His book, Big Love, is one of my favorites. And we co-host the Joy Party, and it's very interactive and fun, and people can get a taste of Joy School there. There's also a free exercise that people can download and do at my website, where I do a little video training taking them through an exercise to personalize a Joy Booster tool for themselves.
Yeah, that's a big exercise and a big gift on your part. What's one of the first things we could do if we don't think we even know how to connect with our joy?
You know, the very first thing, I've studied a lot with Eckhart Tolle and teaching Eckhart Tolle material, and it creates an underpinning for much of what's taught in circles. And the concept of becoming the observer is so critical as a first step. It's really noticing your emotions, noticing that you're not your thoughts, you're not your feelings. They are energetic substance and, you know, entities, you know, they have energy, they are things, but they aren't you. And so sometimes, you know, just as a starter practice, I'll tell people 3 times a day, at least. Some of my Joy students will set their phones to go off or their watches. And, you know, just go inward, say, well, I make them say, sweetheart, what are you feeling? And that's really hard for people at first, like you were mentioning, Filippo. A lot of people don't have a tenderness practice toward themselves. Mm-hmm. In one exercise, we have them create a pet name for themselves. But prior to that, it's just, sweetheart, what are you feeling? And then just really let yourself be with whatever it is. If it's a shitty feeling, if it's you know, a sad feeling, an angry feeling, just own it and embrace it. Let it be there. And then the follow-up question is, sweetheart, what would you love? What would you love to feel? And that just turns the energy hose in a new direction. I always talk about this, like, hose we have coming out of the middle of our forehead that we're just spraying water in situations and people and ideas and thoughts. Wherever we have our focus and our attention, that's what we're watering. That's what's going to grow in our lives. So it's a way to honor where you are right now and at the same time really let yourself feel into, what would I love to be feeling or experiencing? Put your attention and thoughts there at least 3 times a day. And you can use it as a journaling prompt as well.
Lisa, do you blog?
I used to blog. I don't anymore. You're wanting me to wrap up those little packages and send them out into the void. No. I told you I'm so selfish and stingy with my little packages now. If I can't watch you unopen it or open it, then you can't have it.
I get it. Well, no, I was just, well, interesting. Cause the thought came from the fact that it's like, gosh, I'd love to hear, I'd love to listen to her say, sweetheart, what are you feeling right now? I'm like, I can answer you. No, but I'm also thinking, that I don't know if this is in one of your new books that you will be penning yourself, or, you know, if you already share this in Joy class or in Joy School and in Circle, but, you know, there can be joy and hurt at the same time, right?
Oh yeah.
And we don't always, I've never really thought of that. So like if somebody passes or something, that could be very sad and hurtful, but that doesn't mean that joy isn't there present as well in some way, right?
Yeah. I think the real sticky suffering is almost always about regret or guilt or shame. We have so much shame, Filippo. Nobody thinks that word applies to them until we start digging around, and we all carry shame. And when we're in our stuff, when it's self-directed, it's so sticky. So we have, you know, different tools for that kind of suffering. But almost anything else, anything that just happens in the world, you can really allow yourself to be, I call it emotion mixing in the Hay House book that I wrote in 2012. It was the first step of my 7 steps was emotion mixing. And the most powerful emotion to mix into any other one is gratitude, as I'm sure you all talk about all the time on this show, because we can be sad about something or angry about something or frustrated about something and at the same time have gratitude for where we are in the spectrum regarding that thing. You know, everything happens on a spectrum. So there's always ways to mix in some richness. Richness is joy. You know, if everything was just fluffy and goofy and smiley all the time, we wouldn't have any meaning or substance to our lives. So sometimes we need that contrast and we need those, you know, air quote sad situations so that we can really dip into our depth and our richness. And that can be joyful.
So you have provided so much for us here today, and I had asked the question before the break about how we're still in our infancy. So I think that's a positive thing, right? As we wrap up,
I, absolutely think that we are. I mean, when we start looking at why, you know, we talked earlier about why aren't we in joy, it's all this really reptilian brain stuff. We have this safety, like safety is the primary concern still. And we don't really, most of us, need to be concerned about our safety in the lives that we live in this country. But we have all these things that, you know, just 10 minutes ago, a little tiny blip ago, we were cave people with a completely different life, and we haven't caught up. And this whole messy egregiousness happening in the world is just this ginormous wake-up call, I believe, that evolution is speeding up. And, you know, we talked about, do you have to have that dark night of the soul? No, but often for an individual, transformation is preceded by a dark night of the soul. And when we look at the history of humanity, that's often been the case collectively as well. So on our individual personal path, we'll encounter some tremendous obstacle, grow like crazy from it, and then kind of rest on our laurels for a few years before it all starts over again. That's definitely been my path. You know, we spiral. It's not a straight line. It's definitely a spiral. And I think that's true for humanity as well. It's so messy and horrible now because we're in cleanup mode from some huge leaps that we made in recent decades and centuries. We grow spiritually as a species, and then we relax, and then we get used to that new level of spiritual awakening and get over congratulating ourselves, and we look around and notice all these remnants of how we were before. We're like, hey, I thought we'd outgrown all this, you know, this crap, clean this crap up. That's what the Me Too movement was about, and Black Lives Matter. It's like, yeah, we'd made all these big strides, but look, it's still happening. We were supposed to be better than this. So, you know, it takes us forever to clean these things up properly, but at least I feel that we are so clearly moving in that direction.
And moving faster and faster.
And
thanks to conversations like this and people like Lisa McCourt, who shared peace, joy, and happiness and helped us master these skills. Thank you so much, Lisa. Lisa McCourt, MCCOURT.com, LisaMcCourt.com. And there you'll find all about Joy School and Joy School Circle and what else she's doing and going to be doing. And we look forward to more, Lisa. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Filippo. I love y'all.
Thank you. And there's more to come for sure. And with that, we also have our Ask Dorothy question.
Dear Dorothy, this is Marjorie, and I'm grateful for the assistance you have given me in the past. My question concerns a good friend of mine who does lots of scientific research. She tells me that there will be a new therapeutic tool introduced in the near future that will allow one to erase traumatic memories. I don't have a good feeling about this, and my friend says she wants to do it right away, and as she had had a traumatic childhood, wants to erase it completely so she doesn't ever have to deal with it. If it is possible to erase our memories, would this be a good idea?
Dear Marjorie, thank you for this excellent question. Please do the research, and you will discover that it has been possible for years to erase memories. I found this quote from a Bay State Health newsletter regarding this issue. Dr. Peter DePergolis, doctoral studies in neuroethics, the study of the human brain as it relates to good and bad, led to a fascination with autobiographical memory, and the concept of manipulating memories led him to conclude, bad memories are bad, but erasing even bad memories would be catastrophic in the long run. I believe that this is true. As a survivor of a traumatic childhood, I'm grateful for the gifts I received. Once I was able to remember the events I had pushed down for most of my life, I would not be who I am today and would be unable to assist others if I had totally erased my memories. I know now, after working with an amazing life coach, that these events gave me the gifts of compassion and understanding of others' emotional states. These are virtues that I may never have achieved if I had totally erased my memories of traumatic events. Having not only survived the past, I now use the memories of these traumas to better understand my clients' personal situations. I also believe that after all the years of working with many different modalities for myself and my clients, that uncovering the gifts in our traumatic moments can assist us in being better and better every day in every way. I congratulate you, dear Marjorie, for questioning this option and trust that you will continue to seek guidance on important issues. And I also encourage you to do the research on the internet, as there are many excellent articles on this subject. And please use your God-given gift of discernment, because the internet offers us as many lies as it does truths.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write to her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be right back with our musical guest, Vanessa Racci, on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@LifeChangesNetwork.com.
We're back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and with a name like that, you know it gives me great pleasure to introduce our musical guest, Italian-American jazz singer Vanessa Racci. Welcome to the show.
Ciao, Filippo.
Ciao, Vanessa. Come stai?
Va bene, tu?
Gosh. Vanessa, we need an hour.
I know. We do.
Hey, talk about enriching our lives by being around other generations. You grew up with your grandfather from?
Yes, my grandfather was Barese, and I grew up living with him in the basement apartment, and he became my best friend, even though he was born in 1913.
Wow.
And yes. We would have pastries together and listen to music, and that's why I love all the vintage music.
So he introduced you to the music consciously and unconsciously, like it was something he was into, and did you like it then, or you just liked him teaching you or sharing it with you?
I loved it. I would sing it all the time, but I didn't understand that it was jazz.
Oh, funny.
I didn't know until I was older, like, oh, all that stuff grandpa played was jazz.
Wow. You know, that's interesting, because I grew up with a lot of this music too. I didn't know it was jazz. I just thought it was Italian music. And yeah. And when people would say, can you sing jazz? I'm like, no. And yet.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize Sinatra is jazz.
Well, yes, that, and actually how far jazz goes in the history with Italians and Italian-Americans in jazz, right?
Yep, yep. It's very deeply rooted all the way back to New Orleans in 1917.
Yeah, which a lot of people don't know, that there were a lot of Italians there as well, that came straight there from Italy. How did you, like, it wasn't just the music. There's got to be something else, because you are so into the authenticity of the sound and the history. Where did that all come from?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I'm a perfectionist, so.
Okay, we need 2 hours then. No, but it's in your blood in more ways than one. So share with us your connection with the music and the history there. Oh, did we lose Vanessa? Oh no. Vanessa, come back. Vanessa, interrupt. Do let me know when you're back. So Vanessa said her grandfather was Barese, which means he was from a southern Italian town, or region, actually, of Bari. And they grew up in New York, which a lot of people would know, that when one mentions a basement apartment, that is New York. Vanessa, are you back?
Can you hear me?
Okay, now we hear you again. Okay, great. So I was just talking about your grandfather.
I don't know what happened. There's a little, like, warning symbol that says microphone device was unplugged and we didn't touch anything.
Well, we're back. So I shared about your grandfather, but you have a richness, a desire to share this, the heritage, more than just, oh, these are songs that I sing. So that's what I was getting at. Share about that, please.
I think because, you know, he was my best friend, and I guess not only by doing this, not only am I keeping Italian American culture alive, but I'm keeping his memory alive for myself. And so I think that's what makes me the most passionate about it.
Wow. Wow. Well, what's interesting about that is that you are not only keeping it alive for your own personal reasons, and it's benefiting so many people who either heard this music long ago and haven't heard anybody new do it, or haven't heard anybody do it like you do it, or some people who have never even heard it at all and are really digging it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
So are you finding that younger people are attracted to the music that you're making?
Yeah. I mean, especially Italian Americans, because we all hear, you know, our parents play it, our grandparents play it, and it's nostalgic for so many people. Like, I can't tell you how many times after a show, people would come up to me in tears saying, you reminded me of my mother, you reminded me of my grandmother, you transported me back to when I was a child, and just, you know, in the comforts of my own home with Sunday pasta being made on the stove on a Sunday, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think I'm doing what I'm doing for myself, for a lot of people, just keeping those memories alive.
You know, I could see that your music and the way you do it can transcend multi-generational. And I think part of it too is you really care about how each of the instruments sound and how, you know, how they're coming through and how you're sounding. I mean, it's just there's this almost like, like a painting that's just, you know, stamped out a bunch of paintings, and then this one's made by hand. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, that's so nice. Yes, I take a lot of care, even with, you know, how I'm delivering the lyric. I like to kind of start from scratch and just handwrite by hand. It is kind of by hand. I like to handwrite all of the lyrics out and then speak them as though I'm talking to somebody, so that I can get the natural phrasing and pauses and be inspired on how to best deliver that lyric. And my goal is to make you feel like it's a message personally for you. That when I sing to you, you can feel the emotion, and that it's for you.
Well, you know, hopefully, the first song you're going to sing is I would think for one person, but everybody can dream. Can you tell us about the first song?
Oh yes, so this first one is a original that I wrote.
about actually my current husband.
Okay.
And wait, we almost weren't. Husband? So, but I wrote it after he tried to dump me, but he couldn't.
Okay. And so when we hear the title, it'll just give us even more insight.
Absolutely. It's called Come Back Home With Me.
Okay. So with that, let's just jump in and let's hear Vanessa Rachi sing her original song live on the Life Changes show, Come Back Home With Me.
Could you just walk away after the many memories we've made? How can you be so sure? How do you know you've never done this before? And it hurts me to see you go, leaving me here with what I don't know. I don't know what I do now, but you back somehow. I'm gonna run until I catch you. I'm gonna drive until I find you. I'm gonna talk until I change your mind and you come back home with me. How could you just say goodbye when I know deep down you're telling a lie? How can you be so stern after all the years and tears we've earned? And it hurts me to see you go, leaving me here with what I don't know. I don't know what I do now, but I know I'm gonna get you back somehow. I'm gonna run until I catch you. I'm gonna drive until I find you. I'm gonna talk until I change your mind and you come back home with me. Now tell me, baby, what did you think you were doing? You know I'm perfect for you. Well, I can chalk it up to momentary insanity. Just take my hand and say, I'm gonna drive until I find you. I'm gonna talk until I change your mind and you come back home with me. I'm gonna talk until I change your mind and you come back home with me.
Grazie.
Niente,
Vanessa Rachi. Vanessa, knowing that you are a perfectionist, this is so amazing that you're doing a song that hasn't been recorded yet. And what else?
It's killing me a little bit. Yeah, it's called a MIDI file. And these are synthetic instruments. They're not live recorded in a studio, which is what I intend to do in June, actually, to record the album. So that's why it sounds a little bit like ding, 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 because they're not robust, like full-bodied instruments.
It didn't sound like that to us, but thank you so much for sharing that. This is exciting because we just got a taste of what's coming up in her album that she's going to be working on in June. As a matter of fact, at Vanessa Rachi. So Vanessa actually has two S's and Rachi has two C's. So V-A-N-E-S-S-A and then Rachi, R-A-C-C-I. So VanessaRachi.com. There you'll find all kinds of things. And even on our page, we've got her singing Aldi La live in San Jose, California. She's singing At Last. She's got Buonasera live at Birdland, New York City, and lots more, actually. But Vanessa, you also have a couple things at your website that you wanted to share?
Absolutely, yeah. You can go there to also get music for my first album, Italiana Fresca, where I revived all of the old Italian classics my grandfather taught me with jazz arrangements. And I'm raising funds for my new album. They are very expensive. We have fees for musicians, for studio fees, for engineers, for promo videos, videographers, photographers, etc. So if you can help in any way, I would greatly appreciate it. And the information for my GoFundMe page is on my website at VanessaRacci.com.
And Vanessa, you're almost going to be in my backyard or our backyard working with the Italian American Museum of Los Angeles, right?
Yeah. Yes, virtually.
I will virtually,
be
I know.
Doing my show that I launched at Birdland in 2019, which is the history of Italian American jazz through music. So you will be able to hear my album and get a sneak peek before it's recorded. It's going to be on Friday, June 25th. 5 p.m. PST, 8 p.m. EST.
Nice. And then they can always go to Vanessa Racci for all of that, right?
That's right.
Well, actually, your Instagram and everything's there, Spotify and Facebook and all that. So, and speaking of the history of Italian American jazz, this next song, you're going to give us a taste of that history, right?
Yes. I love the song so much because the lyrics, like, basically tell you the story of how jazz was created. It's really cool. And the instrumentals for this song were the very first recorded jazz song in history. And it was written and recorded by a Sicilian-American named Nick LaRocca in 1917. And he was from New Orleans, but he recorded it in New York City. So I wanted to just keep that memory alive, and I'm starting the album with this song because it was the beginning of Italian jazz, and I hope you like it.
And you know, you are a singer, and yet you wanted to make sure we said Italian American jazz singer, and it feels nice bringing that into the conversation.
Oh, thank you. I like it too. It feels like home.
Thank you. Well, so here is Vanessa Racci performing. Are these real music instruments?
No, these are also MIDI files. So,
oh, okay.
Just, you know, excuse the dinky sounding saxophone.
You're adorable. Okay, so here is Vanessa Racci performing live with her MIDI orchestra at the Jazz Band Ball on the Life Changes Show.
Back when a nickel would buy three fingers of pretty good rice, piano players and the honky-tonks would have to work on a slide. One, two was known to a few, some steady obituaries too. Then the word of mouth spread around the South, very other new. You better take that jazz band ball, 'cause it's the ball of them all. All five musicians in a small saloon need in the right time to. Well, they made up their own brand without a note upon the stand. And then they called the D-I-X-I-E Hot Band Alley Candyland. No, we caught on. What's more, he was strictly bon ton. 'Cause like the winner at the starting gate, the music got it and gone. It moved from over the tracks into the society shacks. It was wonderful and deductible from your income tax. You better take that chance, man, ball, 'cause it's the finest of them all. where the trumpet player plays his monologue. All the people shout, "Who's that dog?" You ask how come they yell. They kind of grin and then say, "Well, when the band plays J-A-double-D, it's a B-A-double-L." Now we're going to slow it down. Now, well, sir, you know we caught on. What's more, he was strictly bon-ton. He's like the winner at the starting gate. The music got it and gone. And just move from over the tracks into the society shacks. It was wonderful and deductible from your income tax. You better take that chess band ball, 'cause it's the finest of them all. When the trumpet player plays that monologue, all the people shout, "Ooh, that dog." You ask how come they yell. They kind of grin and then say, "Well, when the band plays J-A-double-Z, it's a B-A-double-S. When the band plays J-A-double-Z, it's a B-A-double-S. Well, they call the D-I-X-I-E, Hot Band Alley, Candyland."
D-I-X-I-E and J-A-double-Z and V-A-N-E-double-S-A, R-A-double-C-I, Vanessa Racci.
I like that. I'm going to put that into my show.
Well, there it is. Well, you know, thank you for what you've brought to this show and what you're bringing to the world of Italian jazz music. What a delight, what a pleasure, what a treat.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for having me, Filippo. It was like, you know, like I said before, we are very alike, and I'm so glad I'm getting to know you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just finding out more. I think I said 2 hours earlier. I think 3 hours is going to be a good start. So Vanessa Racci, V-A-N-E-S-S-A-R-A-C-C-I. Oh, my gosh, that really works. .com. Learn more about her, hear her do her live stuff, and see her live. There's going to be so much more, Vanessa. As things open up, oh boy, it's going to be Vanessa Racci time.
Oh, I can't wait. I hope so.
Okay, well, thank you for being ready for that and for all the good that you're doing musically. And gosh, we'll connect real soon. And thank you.
Thank you so much. What a note.
So buonanotte. So with that, we say buonanotte to Vanessa Racci, and a big thank you also to our guest Lisa McCourt. And on behalf of our executive producer Dorothy Lee Donahue and our producer and co-host Mark Legere, I am your host Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.